The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
John Anika's here, ladies and gentlemen, and that must mean a UFC pay-per-view is upon us. And guess what? There is UFC 298 going down in Anaheim. We're knocking on the door of this one. And John, it's great to see you, my man. I feel like after maybe 6 to 7 weeks of wackiness, I feel like things are getting back to normal, whatever that means in this freaking crazy sport of ours. How's it going?
Always good to be with you. And if you want to ask me about UFC 299 or UFC 300 today, it is okay. But bro, I have done so much media over the last 2 weeks and everybody's trying to spin it forward to Miami or UFC 300. And as we sit here right now, we don't have a main event for UFC 300. But I'm looking at UFC 298, Volkanovski versus Topuria. This is one of the biggest singular fights I think we can put together. The Avid fans are acutely aware of that fact. Paulo Costa against Robert Whittaker. So hopefully we can give 298 some shine today, my man, because everybody's trying to move ahead and we got 14 fights here that we got to break down.
John, I'm so glad you said that because I know you've been doing media. I know it's been mostly 299. I know there's a lot of UFC 300 and that makes me think of this card because this is one of those cards, more specifically the main card itself, where outside of the main event, almost every single fight you can consider an under the radar fight because this just has a little bit of a different feeling to it. Maybe it's because of the 300 chatter, but there's some big names underneath the title fight. You mentioned Paulo Costa and Robert Whittaker and Merab and Henry Cejudo, lots of former champions. I don't know. This just seems like one of the cards, like by the time we get to Wednesday with media day and the press conference, et cetera, I feel like things are going to ramp up quite a bit, but obviously you get that sense as well. This one's just kind of floating by. And once we get to fight week, things will start to get fired up.
Yeah. I mean, with respect to Roman Dolidze and Nassourdine Imavov, could you imagine if Merab Dvalishvili and Henry Cejudo were headlining an event at the UFC Apex? I mean, that would be appointment viewing to be sure. And that fight is happening very early on. Mackenzie Dern is fighting on the prelim portion. So we're absolutely loaded. Of course, the grudge match between Jeff Neal and Ian Machado Gary. But in terms of stakes, obviously you have the title fight, Whitaker Costa, to be sure. But that fight between Henry Cejudo and Merab Dvalishvili is of such consequence that I can't wait to see how it plays out. And it seems like they're taking two-way action. A lot of people have convicted opinions on both sides of it. So we'll see what happens come February 17th.
And we'll get there. The main event is incredible. And I, like we just talked about, I know there's a lot of really fun fights on the books for 299 and 300. But in terms of maybe high-level intrigue, I don't know if it gets better than Volkanovski versus Topuria. We're right around the corner from this one going down. Like when you think of this fight outside of maybe just flying under the radar, what comes to mind immediately when you think Volkanovski Topuria?
It's So it's one of the biggest fights of the year. And when I sat down with Ilya Topuria last December as part of that seasonal press conference, he was more than willing to lean into the fact that maybe this is a vulnerable time in which to be fighting Alexander Volkanovsky. And not a lot of opponents would sort of lay that out there. Certainly the fan base has been very suggestive in terms of this being a good time to maybe pluck off Alexander Volkanovsky, right? Coming off the knockout loss, decisive at that. Was concussed in theory against Islam Makhachev just a few short months ago. And that's why this one didn't happen in January and is happening in February. But Ilya Topuria and Alexander Volkanovsky lead the league in self-belief. I'm not sure we've had more self-belief in a singular UFC fight when you combine these two athletes. And it's a very powerful thing. You know, my former broadcast partner, Brian Stan, talks all the time about manifestation and self-belief. And I obviously still learn a lot from that individual. But Ilya Topuria is absolutely fearless because he believes in the work that they've been doing while nobody's really been paying attention. I mean, I say that in a broad sense, right? But one of the things I asked him in December was, when are your coaches going to get some shine? They're very unheralded, and that's absolutely coming as well if he can win a world championship on February 17th. But I'll be honest with you, Michael. I don't think there's ever a good time to face Alexander Volkanovsky. Certainly, he's going to be smarting after what happened last year in whatever condition he entered the fight in. So it's a huge fight, sixth title defense for Alexander Volkanovsky. And with respect to Max Holloway and Jose Aldo, I think a lot of people out there are arguing that on paper, this could be his toughest title defense. And certainly those questions give way to answers soon.
Yeah, there's two very fascinating narratives heading into this fight outside of just the X's and O's, which is just incredibly intriguing in its own right. Because as you know, like in this sport, there's a lot of what have you done for me lately? A lot of, I guess you could say, revisionist history. But Volkanovsky's 2023. He loses in our fight of the year against Islam Makhachev in February, gets knocked out by Makhachev on short notice in the rematch to end the year. But a lot of people forget that in the middle of the, I guess, the lightweight sandwich, he went out and pitched a near perfect game against Yair Rodriguez, who very similar to Topuria, everyone's like, ah, oh, this might, I think this is the kryptonite stylistically for Volkanovsky. Right. And just based on the conversations I've had, questions and comments I get on my shows, it feels like Volkanovsky is getting completely overlooked here. People just forget that he has a featherweight title defense last year. Have you noticed that yourself? And like, what do you make about a guy like Volk entering this new year coming off of a losing 2023?
Well, discipline and motivation have never really been issues for him, so I expect him full throttle. I don't necessarily love the fact that he is laying the foundation for a potential move to lightweight in advance of this fight. Now, maybe he would fight Ilya Topuria and then somebody like Movsar Eoviloyev, because that's a dangerous fight, not unlike Benoit Saint-Denis in the lightweight division, and maybe Volkanovsky would have an appetite for that fight. But I think he's fine, man. I really do. Even if this is his last go around at 145 pounds, you know, I expect him to be a prime Alexander Volkanovsky. I just think he's fighting a very difficult individual to fight in Ilya Topuria, who has not been beaten by any mixed martial arts athlete as yet. But you're wise to inject Yair Rodriguez's name into the equation, because even though I didn't love the relatively short turn for Yair Rodriguez, like, Volkanovsky is in this active championship cycle, competing every few months. I would have liked to have seen Yair Rodriguez have a little bit more time to prepare for Alexander Volkanovsky, but he's one of the tough guys in the sport to prepare for. And to your point, goddamn shutout. So I expect Volkanovsky to perform well, but those who like Ilya Topuria in this spot, I'm not surprised, because the film doesn't lie. And if you want to talk about some of the challenges that he has had to face, right? I mean, you think Ryan Hall's a picnic to fight? So I'm absolutely fascinated by this fight. It's one of the biggest fights on paper of 2024.
Yeah, it seems like the chip on his shoulder is growing. Like, he always feels like the underdog anyways, even if he's like a minus 300 favorite, he still feels like he's the underdog. But Calvin Kattar always tells me, like, you got to find the chip wherever you can find it. Even if the guy's not talking trash, you just find something to latch onto. And Volk is very good at doing that. But even though he's put together this impeccable career at 145 pounds, undefeated at 145 in the UFC, long title reign, legacy as one of the greats seems nearly cemented, people just continue to have more questions about him. Is this a father time thing where just you look at the statistics under 170, you see guys 35 and older, the record's not great. You think this is more of like a sport wide father time question, or do you think this is more of a Volkanovsky thing amongst the fan base?
Great question. I don't think Volkanovski is going to stick around if he can't beat the best guys in the world. I'm excited to see his body actually ascend to 55 and spend some time there. But Alex Pereira and Alexander Volkanovski, these elite, elite fighters who are in these active competition cycles, they're prize fighters too, and they make a lot of money to show. So I have always sat down with Volkanovski and just been in awe of the total package. But one thing that comes out of every fighter meeting is I want to fight often. He wanted to fight four times in 2023. Wow. It didn't materialize, but he was pretty damn close. So I love Volkanovski. Future's in the Hall of Fame. In terms of his long-term appetite for MMA, I can understand why 45 might be something that has a short shelf life. He's already ubiquitously regarded as the greatest featherweight of all time, so I'm not sure the Ivloyev fight is going to have a bunch of appeal necessarily. But I think Volkanovski still has three or four prime years left, and if he can stay healthy, he's going to make a lot of money in those said years.
On the other side, you have Ilia Topuria, and I love the league leaders and self-belief thing that you just said, but still, talk about contrasting personalities. Look no further than these two guys, because, you know, Volk is the t-shirt and jeans guy, and Topuria is dressed like the star you believe you can be guy. This guy's wearing $500 suits to MMA hour interviews, and Volk's just wearing a t-shirt and shorts. This guy has been so impressive, undefeated, 6-0 in the UFC. I was cage side for the Josh Emmett fight, which is just a ridiculous performance. What has it been like in your role watching this guy come in and emerge as this breakthrough contender and potential superstar?
So I always say Roman Dolidze is the guy who intimidates me the most in a fighter meeting setting, right? And not to suggest that I am equally intimidated by Ilia Topuria, but he is a fucking gangster, if I can say that, on MMAfighting.com. Like, truly, he walks into a room and he commands your attention. And he already has some legitimate star power, right? Certainly in a meritocracy, he's the most deserving featherweight contender right now, but I got to believe he's north of 2 million followers on Instagram already, and he hasn't even gotten that championship shine that he's about to get in Anaheim with the first domestic pay-per-view of the year. So he's an absolute stud. That says nothing of his skill set and the unheralded nature of his coaches, as we talked about, but he is one of one, right? There have been a lot of confident athletes in advance of their title shot. Sean O'Malley certainly comes to mind, Alex Pereira. But this dude, you know, when he says destiny, it's like, yeah, man, like maybe you can see into the future, right? Like you believe him at his every word, and just a very thoughtful guy in multiple languages. It's easy to see why he has transcended cultures. And, you know, it's good to have lovers and haters, right? I mean, there's certainly people who are put off by maybe some of the confidence. Maybe they think it's cockiness. I certainly think it's more confidence and self-belief than cockiness. But, you know, haters pay the bills too, right?
Yes. It almost at times feels like all he needs to do is walk in the octagon and he's going to win the title. Like, it's so funny. Like he feels like this is going to be an easy fight and it's just inevitable he will become champion. And you mentioned Sean O'Malley, like in Boston, being around that fight week, it just felt like all week long it was meant to be that on that night against Aljamain Sterling, Sean O'Malley is going to win the belt. And when you play this game, it's a very risky game because if he wins, strap the rockets to him. Maybe the UFC does a pay-per-view in Spain later this year, early next year. But if he loses, it's not like he can't get back, but it's going to be some tough scenes for the short term, will it not?
Yeah. Yeah. But he's a thoughtful guy, right? Like, what is the downside of him suggesting this is an easy fight? Because you can be sure he and his coaches believe this is a harder fight than they are letting on. Now, they could get a quick finish, and then he looks like a genie, but I just feel like he is so thoughtful and meticulous mentally, physically, emotionally. Everything is done the right way. So, yeah, if he has to eat some crow on the back end for saying that the consensus greatest featherweight of all time is going to be a relatively easy fight, okay, you know, but there's nothing easy about preparing for Ryan Hall or dealing with Josh Emmett's power. You know, I understand Volkanovski deserves to be on the pedestal that talking heads like me have perpetually put him on. But I just think Ilia Topuria is a championship level athlete, and sort of to your point, I wouldn't be at all surprised, even if this was a quick loss for Topuria, to see him ascend again and realize a championship at some point in time. He feels like he's a guy who has that championship medal and makeup. He really does.
Do you feel like if Volk does go out and do Volk things at 298, that this will be his last fight at featherweight?
So I wish I could reserve judgment on that, right, until I sit down with him and see the fight. But yes, I think because he's throwing those comments out into the universe even before the fight, it stands to reason that that if he can beat Ilia Topuria, just given the way a lot of people talk about this title defense and how hard it's going to be, I think this would be a nice capstone on his featherweight career and a nice note upon which to go out if he decides to move up to 155 pounds. And back to the prize fighting theme, right? I mean, think about all the big fights that there are for Alexander Volkanovsky at 155 pounds. You know, you could do worse than throwing him in a BMF setting, right? Certainly a fight against Justin Gaethje has some appeal. So I think the horizon is very monetarily sound for Volk, no matter what division he decides to compete in. But yeah, I mean, you and me can pray that he'll fight Iavloya, but I'm not sure I see it happen.
Fair. So if you're Iavloya, are you feeling pretty confident either way that you're next? Because if Topuria wins, that could be interesting, because Volk is he's a competitor. He's going to want to try to get that one back, but maybe he wants to take some time. Maybe Iavloya just gets Topuria for the first one. But if Volk wins, you have to feel like no matter what happens, he's getting a title shot next.
Yeah, shout out to Arnold Allen, just a bad dude in his own right, who just has been a little bit unfortunate when those big fights have materialized. But yeah, as you and I have discussed in the past, Ilia Topuria and Mavsar Iavloyev have already been booked. And if I was sitting here doing the Anakin Florian podcast, maybe my producer populates the rankings. I don't need to see him, right? Like, Mavsar Iavloyev is the guy, and yet there are still a lot of naysayers on him, or at least maybe because the fight with Arnold Allen was relatively close and because he was put in some submissions against Diego Lopez with next to no training camp during Ramadan, you know, people want to doubt him. I mean, they're always going to be doubters, but yeah, man. Right. Like, I would spin it back to you, the president of the Mavsar Iavloyev fan club. I mean, don't you believe that that he's going to be the guy? And that's the thing. Ilia Topuria has had some things to say about some of the guys like Brian Ortega, who he will, you know, dispose of as a possible future title challenger because of the inactivity. One thing about Ilia Topuria, and I'd imagine you'd agree with me on this, wants to fight the most dangerous guys. And if Mavsar Iavloyev is that guy to guys like you and me, that's the guy that Ilia Topuria is going to have no problem signing on the dotted line to fight.
Oh my God, that fight rules. Maybe someday. Hope, maybe we get it, win or lose. At some point, we have to see that fight, and I am all here for it.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Just like I am all here for the co-main event of this card, Robert Whittaker coming off of the loss to the now champ, Dricus du Plessis, against Paulo Costa, who we have not seen since the Luke Rockhold fight. He's been booked a couple of times, or at least we thought he was, and then the fight just never really materialized for one reason or another. The Hamzat Chimaev fight, dude was dealing with a nasty infection, but he's ready to go, and Whittaker's ready to go, and Whittaker says he's just going to go in and try to hurt Costa. He wants to get that animalistic attitude back in him after this loss to DDP. Maybe felt like he didn't give DDP enough credit for the hunger and desire that he had on his road to becoming champion. This fight's just going to be wacky and weird, in my opinion. Is it not?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be bloody. Hall of Famers can still learn at whatever stage of their career. Certainly, Alexander Volkanovski was suboptimal against Islam Akhachev last year, but that fight doesn't come without its learning lessons. And I give Robert Whittaker a lot of credit, right? Still a relatively young man. I remember when his Twitter handle had 1990 in it for the year that he was born. So he learned a lot against Drakus. South Africans, comment below, right? He says Drakus and Drakus on the file, but a lot of the South Africans are after me, so if it's Drakus, we'll try to affect some change there. But Whittaker learned a lot, of course, in that fight, that loss last summer, and he has bided his time. I love the fact that when you are Robert Whittaker, future Hall of Famer, number one contender type, it's going to be guys like Paulo Costa who show up in your bracket, right? Criminally underappreciated guy in my mind. Certainly there was the two-fight losing streak not all that long ago, but responded in kind, did Costa against Luke Rockhold. Bro, this fight is insane, man. That's why we're not talking about UFC 300 today. I don't know what the betting line is even yet. You know, I try to predict those things and then usually I'm way off, but it's a big spot for Robert Whittaker. But I would argue there's more pressure on Paulo Costa, right? Just because when he did get his title fight, it was less than an ideal performance. And, you know, Paulo Costa needs a championship, I think, a lot more than Robert Whittaker does in terms of his legacy. So fascinating co-main event that is as big as any fight I could call, honestly.
Yeah, completely agree. Paulo Costa wins. Like, if DDP's still the champion, you know, 4 or 5 months from now and Costa's available, like, you know, they're going to try to put that fight together because they're just going to ramp that thing up. It'll be super fun and very curious to see how Robert Whittaker does. People think Robert Whittaker is like 42 years old, but you're right. Like, he's still a young man. He's way younger than I am. So, I mean, come on. This guy still gets plenty of gas left in the tank.
And well, I think we'll find out exactly how much at UFC 298 for those who suggest that the DDP fight was a harbinger of things to come.
I love this Merab Cejudo fight. And now there's an extra potential layer to this fight because Merab has just been a wrecking ball. He's been impossible to beat. But Cejudo, like, stylistically, like, presents some really interesting challenges to Merab that we really haven't seen before in his UFC run, especially on the run that he's on right now. But now Cejudo is saying, essentially, I mean, he hasn't flat out said the R word, but he's certainly teasing it. If he goes out there and gets dusted up by Merab, maybe he doesn't feel like he has much left to give to this sport. And Cejudo just seems like a guy, like, if I can't win a title or beat the best guys, like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
There's a lot on the line here. Not just a potential title shot, but maybe the career of Henry Cejudo.
I thought you were going to say the M word for money, because Henry Cejudo has talked about making money in the octagon. Like, that's the best place for him to make money. And certainly that was a big part of this return, but an athlete on his level, you never doubt. It seems like maybe there are going to be some changes in his corner relative to the Aljamain Sterling fight. I got the corner audio sheet and it looked like maybe there were going to be some changes. So certainly some investigating to do as far as that is concerned, but Henry Cejudo is always one fight away. Some people were surprised that he came back and got an immediate title fight. Certainly if he beats Dwalish Willie, it stands to reason that that they're going to try to put him in a big fight, if not a title fight. But I'm really curious to see how both of these guys handle the stylistic and physical challenge that the other presents, because my goodness, man, like, I just wonder how long I could last with someone like Merab. You know, dude, it's just the last guy in the world I would want to fight at almost any weight class. He keeps coming. You have to separate him from consciousness. And historically, even though Cejudo has had some big knockouts, that's not necessarily his game. So playing the long game with Merab, like, fucking yikes. I don't care how good your training camp is. So I would imagine Mayrob's going to be the betting favorite in this spot. But we'll see what Henry Cejudo can do in terms of turning back the clock. But it's hard for me to go long form right now on Cejudo without sitting down and talking to the guy. Whereas Merab, I think we all know what this dude's doing every day, and hopefully he takes care of himself, because every other day he's popping up on Instagram doing something that he probably contractually should not be doing.
He's so funny right now. the Professor Marab gimmick might be one of my favorite things in the sport right now. Just been waiting for this guy, because I know it's always been there from conversations I've had, but now the personality is starting to come out.
Yeah.
I think the timing of this personality coming out is absolutely brilliant with Sean O'Malley as champion and potentially Chito Vera. And I know we're not talking 299, but you have to believe, you have to mention that fight when talking about this one. The personality of Marab, it's tremendous right now. I love every bit of it.
I can't say how much Marab moves the needle in terms of like that Georgian contingent getting behind him, right? We talk about some of these athletes with a massive following in like Tajikistan. I don't know how much that moves the needle for the UFC, but you and I love watching him fight. Like, stylistically, it's totally exhaustive offense all the fucking time, right? So promotionally, I would think you want offense all the time. So I think his style is very promotable. And to your point, on a microphone and with the red jacket, Professor Marab, this guy's got it all. Speaks multiple languages, not unlike Ilia Topuria. So yeah, man, I'm excited to see what he can do with the showcase. And, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Dana White guarantee him a title fight on the front end of this thing if he can beat Henry Cejudo. So maybe somebody can ask him that at the UFC 298 press conference. But it does feel like Marab is going to find himself in a Bilal Muhammad situation, that if he beats Henry Cejudo, he might have to wait 12 months, right? But that he would get guaranteed a title fight, because there's nothing else for that man to do.
If Chito beats O'Malley and he wins, he's getting a title shot. If O'Malley retains, that's where things could get a little bit interesting. As you mentioned, sort of like the Leon Bilal situation. But as a... just one more thing about Marab, as somebody who like kind of has to lay out a 3-man booth as you do, is there anybody tougher to call a fight for than Marab Dvalishvili? Like, you can't even breathe. You can't even take a space. He's just constantly moving and doing stuff. And then you have to lay out a little bit to let, you know, DC and Rogan talk. Is there anybody harder to call a fight for than Marab right now, pound for pound?
Well, I always say that I like having a jiu-jitsu expert or a grappling person to my immediate right, because there are certainly some guys who will go through all these different progressions on the ground, and that is way over my head. Thankfully, though, as you know, we're doing television and not radio, so it can allow for not dead air, but allowing some of the ambiance and the crowd to sort of take those moments, right? When he's shooting 15 times in a round, the crowd can take some of those takedowns away from me. But yeah, I mean, certainly got to pick your spots and allow the broadcast partners in, because if you were doing radio play-by-play from a Rob Dvalishvili, bro, like, just be the hamster wheel.
Yeah, you'd have, it'd be incredible. It'd be like a commercial. You barely hear the breaths. You just have to like mute and just blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Ian Garry and Jeff Neal. I'm happy they rebooked this fight. I know Vicente Luque was supposed to fight him at 296. Other plans, obviously, for Luque. But when they booked this fight for Boston, I was like, okay, this is the true test for Ian Garry. No, nothing against Vicente Luque, but I just liked the progression here. And Jeff Neal is just super game. And when he's on, he is incredibly tough to beat. But Ian's obviously, we talked about Ian heading into 296, like everything that's been going on, and he's come out and done a couple of interviews since then. By the time we get to like Thursday or Friday, even though Volkanovski Topuria is the main event and everyone's going to be talking about it, I feel like everyone's going to be talking about Ian Garry. It's going to be the Ian Garry show, much like it was heading into 296. Have you talked to him at all? Like, do you kind of know what his mindset is heading into this fight? I know he's confident and we've seen the Instagram videos, but I know you talk to him from time to time. Have you had any conversations with him since 296 in the fallout of that
his whole situation? Team, I have communicated with his wife and his team, but not him directly. But when I talk about Ilia Topuria and that championship medal and that mindset and all of that, Ian Machado Garry has it, right? So largely, this really is a lot of noise. How does he compartmentalize that noise on the biggest stage of his career now, in this sort of rivalry matchup with Jeff Neal? I don't know, but if I was a betting man, I wouldn't expect it to be an issue for Ian Machado Garry. The General Saif Saud is one of my best friends in MMA, and I think when I see him on Friday, he's going to talk about the magnitude of the challenge of beating Ian Machado Garry. Like, this dude's a 5-tool player. Cardio is actually his best weapon, and people don't even talk about that. They talk about the skills and the length and everything else. And Machado Garry certainly not getting worse alongside the great Diego Lima. So I'm excited to see this particular version. But you hit the nail on the head when it comes to Jeff Neal. When he's on, he could be the best welterweight in the world, right? He just has to be healthy and on. And a lot of athletes talk about the zone or the proverbial flow state in a fight. You can't always find it. Even Ian Garry has said in the past, like, oh, I was surprised in that fight how quickly I found my flow state, right? So if Jeff Neal can find that and get into a good rhythm, he's one of the best welterweights in the world as well. But I don't have to look at the betting line to tell you Ian Machado Garry be favored, and he's going to be favored against a lot of these welterweights in the world. So we'll be picking the brain of Saif Saud this weekend. Certainly Jeff Neal has been his star pupil for years, and health has gotten in the way of the championship trajectory a little bit, but I wish it was five rounds. Maybe they won't be needed, but it's a hell of a featured bout coming up at 298.
Do you feel like enough time has passed that if Ian just goes out and just obliterates Jeff Neal, which is a tall task, that we kind of forget the last few months? Like, I know we even talked, I think I asked you this exact same question after 296, but the wound was still a little bit fresh. And even if you rip the Band-Aid off, it's still there. But I feel like maybe enough time has passed that maybe that if he goes out and has the performance of a lifetime, sometimes winning is all you need to get people past that. There's going to be some naysayers and doubters. You get him, I get him. But at the same token, time heals all wounds. And I feel like Ian Garry, at his age and his skill set, if he goes out and delivers, I think people might have short-term memory.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair and a good way to set it up. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you only need 72 hours to move you to the back page. But I just think he is one of those ultimate competitor types. And not to say he can't get knocked down by Song Kanan, but we saw his resolve in that fight. So, yeah, I believe in the guy, but I think there are just going to be certain athletes who always have a legion of haters. And sometimes all it can take is one moment. And certainly you and I can speak to this, but certainly there is a segment of the fan base that would forever judge me by the custody battle comment, right? Even though there was no ill will or malicious intent, I was trying to humanize the athletes and I did a poor job of that on that night. So there's a lot of fans that will never be back on the side of Ian Machado Garry. But for me, as a play-by-play guy, thankfully, at the end of the day, it's about the martial arts. And even though I never know what I'm going to say when a fighter walks out, I never script my walkouts ever. I would imagine that noise would be a word that you might hear pop out of my mouth in terms of Ian Machado Garry's ability to sort of mute that noise. But at the end of the day, when I pass the baton, it's probably going to be talking about the world-class mixed martial arts athlete that I believe Ian Machado Garry to be. So thankfully for me, given my role as a play-by-play guy, I don't need to really sensationalize much.
Main card's kicking off with a banger, John Anik. Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, at least as of right now, he was supposed to fight Ikram Alaskarov, which I love that fight oh so much, but Ikram not making it. And then we reported literally moments after UFC 297 ended, Roman Kopylov stepping in. And man, what a roll this guy's been on. This is a great fight. Love this fight.
Yeah, both scary guys to face. I mean, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, right? When I say he's as game as anybody on the roster, I hope that registers as a compliment, because we talk a lot, my broadcast partners and I do, when you're known for gameness or toughness, sometimes that can be a negative thing, but he has all the skills in the world and is a very dangerous guy in all phases. Roman Kopylov obviously has a lot of momentum right now. I was kind of freaking out yesterday when I went through my fighter card library because I can't find my notes on Roman Kopylov. This is one of the bad things when you handwrite all your stuff. But yeah, man, like I would imagine for Sean Shelby, Roman Kopylov would be one of the more avoided guys at 185 pounds. Right now, just given what I think a lot of people think his ceiling could be and just how comfortable he looks in the octagon from moment one of these fights recently, just an absolute sniper. And he's tough. I love the way he moves his head defensively as well. Yeah, I mean, that's a slot that is prime, right? You get that pay-per-view main card opening bout. And we've sort of built this as the year of the middleweight division in a lot of respects. So one of these guys is going to factor prominently in that equation. Maybe we won't need I don't think we'll need the judges for this one. I don't know what the total rounds, 2.5. I'd probably go under.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Andrew Lee, Miranda Maverick, great fight. You mentioned Amanda Lemos, Mackenzie Dern, a lot going on there. A lot of up and coming prospects who are really fun on this card as well. Look, this, I know all the spotlight's on 299 and 300, but top to bottom, this is going to be a super fun watch from beginning to end. There's going to be a lot of finishes, a lot of fight of the night contenders. It may not have the sizzle and the steak of 299 and the 300 as of right now, which still doesn't have a main event, like you said, but this is going to be fun. This is going to be a really fun card to watch. I hope people don't skip it.
Yeah, Oban Elliott making his UFC debut, taking on Val Woodburn on the prelims. Sean Sheehan has been talking my ear off about Oban Elliott for years, so we'll see what he does with the UFC debut. And one thing I would just point out, shout out to Mackenzie Dern as well for stepping in for Tatiana Suarez against Amanda Lemos. That fight could be fucking insane. But Justin Taffa fighting Marcos Rogério Paisão de Lima. Now, Paisão was on the wrong end of that terrible Derek Lewis knockout when he had all this heavyweight momentum. But now the fights are getting bigger for Justin Taffa, right? And certainly a promotable guy in that region with his power. But the fights now are going to get more difficult. So I had in my notes, I'm just fascinated to see what Justin Taffa can do as the challenges get stiffer. And Paisão is going to be a man on a mission as well. So we got heavyweights. We got it all, man. I can't wait to get to California. It's been a while.
Yes. Well, I appreciate the time as always. John, UFC 298 coming up in Anaheim, California this Saturday as you hear this. And the main event is going to be incredible. And can't wait to hear you on the old microphone. I assume it's the old trio back at it again. And it's going to be a lot of fun, my man. So thank you for joining us.
I think Michael Bisping is joining me and Joe Rogan, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
I'm not trying to break any news. That's for sure. I like my name to be out of the headlines, but I do believe if you want to do some research that it'll be Michael Bisping coming up at UFC 298. So,
well, we'll delay this interview a couple of days. Well, thank you, John. You're the man. And we'll talk in a couple of weeks before UFC 299.
Sounds good, buddy. Always good to see you.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility. Eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.